All right. Hello, Ken and everyone. And I'm very happy to be here on this snow day. We're having a snow day in Fort Collins, where Jasmine is, all the way down to Lita, where both Cheryl and my mom are. So everybody here that I know, and everybody in between, like Ron in Colorado Springs, and of course, Jacqueline and Ken Rebecca and Lynn here in Pueblo, just everybody that I know here and work with here is having a snow day today. I've spent my snow day working. I selected and purchased lamps for the retreat house. I've also done some personal work, like it's time for FAFSA, if you guys know what that is. That's when you apply for federal aid for the fiscal year. We're in open enrollment for medical insurance, so I've put that in and then looked for tier insurance. So I haven't even got us yet today. I'm still on my PJs, but it's not exactly been a relaxing day. It's kind of been a detail-focused day. Even when shopping for lamps, it was very detail-focused. To get the right lamp for the right place, for the right purpose, for the right price. So I kind of feel like I need a break, and teaching a wonderful shift, all that detail-oriented type of work into the heart. So I'm pretty excited to be here. Before I begin, what I'm going to do is play a song. This morning, what came out today on our daily update was an article, not really an article, it was a thing. It's called Simple Man by Michael Langford. So what I'm going to do, since several people read that article today and are familiar with that interpretation that Michael shared, I'm going to open with that song tonight. So this is the song by Bad Company, Simple Man. When I was a teenager, it's possible that Michael Langford did it because he's a year older than me. So, very helpful. And going next to the publishing. And today, it's called Guru and His Grace. And I am on page 66. Starting at the top of the page. The question at the top of the page from the devotee is this. Will the guru help us to know the true self through initiation and so forth. And so Ramana Maharshi says, does the guru hold you by the hand and whisper in your ear? You may imagine him to be what you are yourself. Because you think you are with a body, you think he is also, that you think he also has a body to do something tangible to you. His work lies within, in the spiritual realm. And I've never really been into, I don't know how to call it, I don't know what word to use. I just don't know what word to use. There's all kinds of things, quote, spiritual, that really have nothing to do with truth. All kinds of things spiritual that have nothing to do with truth. You know, like if we look at the New Age movement, you know, you've got all these crystals and, you know, different stuff, which I know nothing about because I've never had anything to do with them. But there's just, you know, all kinds of spiritual stuff, quote spiritual, that has nothing to do with truth. It's just, it's games. And that's true in India, too. I mean, there are lots and lots of, and a lot of people know it more in a general sense. Lots of things they do to compete. That have nothing to do with truth. And it's okay that I know nothing about that stuff. It's just unnecessary to know anything about it. The person asked the question certainly comes out of a culture, it looks like, where the guru initiates the devotees in whatever ways they do that. And so, is asking Ramana, will the guru help know the true self through initiation and so forth? Those other things that gurus do. Right? And Ramana Maharshi is saying, the guru, this outer guru that you're looking for to teach you different things. In fact, I know one thing I went through once, which maybe some of you guys know a little bit about. Maybe some of you know a whole lot more about it than I do, but I know at least a little bit about it so I can use it as an example. When I first wanted to learn to meditate, and this is before Michael Langford and I formed a personal relationship and he taught me to meditate, so this was prior to that. But I wanted to learn to meditate, and I didn't really know how. There was a transcendental meditation introductory session in Colorado Springs. It was free. You know, after that, it's not free. In fact, it was quite expensive to go any further with them. But I didn't know that, and I went to this free transcendental meditation introduction. And, you know, one of the things they told us that they could give us was our own unique mantra, which if I understood them was really just kind of sounds. They weren't words like I am that I am. They were just sounds. But somehow they could give us our own unique mantra. And then by us meditating on our own unique mantra, you know, we would transcend all of these things. They had this list of things that we would transcend and we would awaken. And then they wanted, you know, X number of thousands of dollars to do that. And I never went back, of course. Lots of people pay that money and get that unique, just for me mantra. Because we think we have to get something from outside of us. You know, so whatever these different gurus sell, you know, I remember once I saw some kind of a brochure where some teacher, I don't even remember who it was, at the time I knew him, but I don't even remember who it was promising enlightenment in 3 days if you came to this thing, and of course there was a price tag attached. You know, and again, people pay that, and they go. And these price tags aren't small price tags. You know, we're talking like $6,000 for a weekend or something like that. It's not, you know, it's not like an Awakening Together price tag when we have a retreat. When we have a retreat, we charge very, very, very little over what it costs us to provide the retreat. You know, there are expenses with retreats. And we charge basically what it costs to provide the retreat. And typically, if you're to look at our annual report, you know, we might make a couple $1,000s a year on our retreat. So we're not making big money. You know, we're not making $6,000 a weekend or anything like that. So, you know, people pay big money, if they have it, to go and get something from someone else. Because they think they have to get that something from someone else in order to awaken. And so what Ramana Maharshi is basically saying in this answer is, you don't have to get anything from anyone else to awaken. You know, the work is on the inside, right? It's you with you. I mean, certainly a guru can be helpful. What Ramana Maharshi told us previously, which we looked at last week, was that really what the external guru's job is to do is from the outside push you inward, and what the inner guru's job is to do is from the inside pull you inward. What they both have in common, the true outer guru, not the one who's trying to sell you something that he can give you for thousands of dollars, but the true inner guru, I mean the true outer guru, is just pointing you inward, trying to help motivate you to go in. There's nothing for the guru to actually give you. You already are the truth. You only need to go in and discover that. You need to really discover two things: everything that is not true, so that you can let go of it, disbelieve it, disregard it. And you need to see that truth, and you need to contemplate and focus on that truth until you realize fully, without any doubt or any forgetfulness, that that's what you are. And that's an inner work. You know, nothing that I or anyone else can give you. Can only point and encourage, right? So, again, the question is, will the guru help us to know the self through initiation and so forth? And Ramana Maharshi starts off, does the guru hold you by the hand and whisper in your ear? Now, I don't know exactly why he said that, but I know something that I've told people many times that is very, very similar. I've told people that I'm not a very good teacher for you because I can't be with you all the time whispering in your ear, telling you what to think, what to say, what to do, right? How to look at things. You know, I might be able to inspire you with the teachings that I do here in the sanctuary or in some other way that, you know, we communicate with each other. But I can't be that guru that's there with you all the time. And that's really what each of us needs. And the only guru that can fulfill that role is the inner guru. Only the inner teacher can be with us all of the time. And so maybe Ramana Maharshi is thinking something similar, right? Because he says, does the guru hold you by the hand and whisper in your ear? You may imagine him to be what you are yourself. Because you think you are with a body, you think he has also a body to do something tangible to you. His work lies within, in the spiritual realm. So I feel like Ramana Maharshi again is telling him, you know, forget about initiation or those other things that gurus say they offer. You know, just forget about that stuff. the true guru's work lies within. Right? Again, the outer guru points towards within, encourages you to go within, and the inner guru pulls you within. Now a devotee asks, how is the guru found? And Ramana Maharshi says, God, who is immanent in his grace, takes pity on the loving devotee and manifests himself according to the devotee's development. The devotee thinks that he is a man and expects a relationship as between two physical bodies. But the guru, who is God, or the self incarnate, works from within, helps the man to see the error of his ways, and guides him in the right path until he realizes the self within. So, you know, it would be silly to deny that there are outer teachers that are helpful to us. We've all experienced outer teachers that are helpful to us. But again, there's a big difference between the true guru and the false guru. I remember in the Bible, Jesus said something about beware of wolves in sheep's clothing, right? The false gurus. These false gurus have always been around. The ones who really want to get something for themselves, money, power, followers, sex, whatever, fame. The real guru, regardless of whether they're famous or not famous, there are some true gurus that are somewhat famous. And there are some true gurus that nobody's ever heard of. And I'm referring to people in body right now. The true guru is a person who doesn't attempt anything. The true guru just lives in the moment, isn't really trying to influence anyone or attempt anything, is just being in the moment in whatever way they feel guided to be. And, you know, they don't have a planned program that they, you know, like a product that they can sell. When they open their mouths, they themselves don't know what they're going to say. In other words, the true guru, and right now, again, I'm referring to bodies. The true guru is what NTI calls the empty shell. And that's so the true guru, the capital T, capital G guru, can come through them. So they don't have a product. They don't have a program. They don't have something that they can give you. They can show up and they can be present, and then whatever happens through them happens through them. And they didn't attempt anything. They didn't attempt to make something happen. They just made themselves available. And what happens when true gurus do this, you know, and I'll go ahead and use Muji as an example. When they do it very successfully over and over and over again, is that they attract people, obviously. And the people think it's that person. They think it's Muji, right? It's not Muji. I mean, the only thing that Muji does is allow himself to be empty. And to let whatever comes through, comes through. He doesn't do anything else. And that wisdom that comes through, that clarity that comes through, lives in each and every one of us. Any one of us, if we become the empty shell, that's the requirement. Any one of us can be as good as Muji at teaching, at helping others. Not that Muji is attempting to teach or attempting to help others, because if he was, he wouldn't be the empty shell. But the teaching comes through him. The helping others happens through him. And any one of us can do that if we're willing to be empty. If we get rid of everything we think and want to achieve and how we want others to see us, so if you really look at that, even though Muji seems to be outside of me, if I saw him as my teacher, Muji seems to be outside of me. The truth is, the wisdom that's coming through Muji is the same wisdom that's in me. Therefore, he isn't really outside of me. This is why here in Awakening Together, we encourage people to journal with the inner teacher. Again, I can't be a very good teacher because I can't walk around with you holding your hand, whispering in your ear all the time. I just can't. Nor do I want to. But if you can form that relationship with your inner teacher instead of forming it with an outer teacher, that inner teacher is with you all the time. You can ask the inner teacher over and over and over again, what am I to do now? How am I to see this? What am I to think? What am I to say? And be guided perfectly. You can be the empty shell, and whatever is needed for anyone else can come through you perfectly. So the question is, how is the guru found? And the word that Ramana Maharshi uses instead of guru to refer to the guru is God. God, who is immanent. Right? God, who is immanent. God and the guru are the same thing. Whether that guru is coming through Muji or someone else, or whether it's the inner guru that you're paying attention to, it's all the same, and it's all what Ramana Maharshi is calling God. God, who is immanent in his grace, takes pity on the loving devotee and manifests himself according to the devotee's development. You know, so again, we've talked about this before. It could even be a book. The perfect book for you now. For me, one of the first books that really helped me on the spiritual path was Peace Pilgrim, right? Her work and life in her own words. That fell into my hands because that was perfect for me at that time. So, Peace Pilgrim, Muji, and the wisdom that comes through me when I'm the empty shell, all the same thing. It's all the Guru. It's all God. It's all the right mind of consciousness manifesting in whatever form is helpful to awaken consciousness to itself. God, who is immanent in His grace, takes pity on the loving devotee and manifests Himself according to the devotee's development. The devotee thinks that he is a man. Now, of course, this is when the devotee thinks, you know, like Muji is a man, right? Which we've explained is not true. Muji is the empty shell. And the guru that comes through Muji is not a man. It's universal right mind. It's not a man. How could it come through Muji and through Regina and through Peace Pilgrim if it was a body? If it was a man. It's universal right mind. But the devotee thinks it is a man, if it's a man speaking, or a woman, if it's a woman speaking, or a book, if it's a book that it's reading, right? The devotee thinks it's the form. The devotee thinks that he is a man and expects a relationship between two physical bodies. But the guru, who is God, or the self incarnate, works from within, helps the man to see the error of his ways. It's really important, listen to that, helps the man to see the error of his ways. If the guru doesn't help us to see the error of our ways, including the belief that the guru is a man, like Muji, right, or a woman, like Regina, if the guru doesn't help us to see the error of our ways, the guru isn't helping us to awaken. The guru is allowing us to stay stuck in our misperceptions, which would mean that it's not a guru at all. So the guru has to help us see the error of our ways, in whatever way the guru does that. But the guru, who is God or the self incarnate, works from within, helps the man to see the error of his ways, and guides him in the right path until he realizes the true self within. And again, the best guru is the inner guru, because the inner guru is the only one that can guide you on the right path moment to moment to moment. No physical guru can do that, because no physical guru can be with you all of the time. And again, that's why here in Awakening Together, we encourage people to journal with the inner guru, to really form a relationship with the inner guru, get to know the guidance of the inner guru, live by the guidance of the inner guru, and of course, eventually, surrender to that inner guru in every moment. The devotee asks, what should the devotee do then? And Ramana Maharshi says, he has only to live up to the words of the Master and work within. The Master is both within and without. So he creates conditions to drive you inward and at the same time prepares the interior to drag you to the center. He thus gives a push from without and exerts a pull from within, so that you may be fixed at the center. Now, one thing that's really interesting, and there's more to this answer, it's a four-paragraph answer, I'll take it a paragraph at a time. But one thing that's really interesting about this particular paragraph in this answer is he says that the guru creates conditions to drive you inward. That doesn't mean, you know, if you see your teacher as Muji or if you see your teacher as Regina, that doesn't mean Muji or Regina are consciously trying to set up situations to drive you inward. Because again, Muji and Regina are empty shells. Muji and Regina aren't trying to affect or achieve anything. But the universe, as the guru, is manifesting in a manner that is helpful to you. Some of that manifestation may come from the person that you perceive as your teacher. But by far, that is not the only way that the universe manifests to push you within. You can actually see every single situation that arises in your life as the guru manifesting to push you within. Every single situation. And you would be completely right in seeing it that way. And again, how could any person, be it Muji, Regina, or any other person, how could any person do that, arrange your whole life so that it's pushing you within? You know, people, if you read the writings by Ramana Maharshi's devotees, they used to give Ramana Maharshi credit for creating the circumstances of their life that caused them to go within. You know, so like if someone lost their job, and if that losing of their job was helpful in pushing them more within, they would credit Ramana for manipulating the universe in such a way that they lost their job. But that again is associating the guru with a body. The guru is the universal mind. It's a mistake to associate it with a body. But it is not a mistake to see, you know, when that losing of the job pushed you within, it is not a mistake to see that it was the guru manifesting as that circumstance. In fact, one of the things that we looked at in Gentle Healing the other day were the 12 lessons that we learned from NTI. The second lesson, you are the Son of God, and everything you experience is a gift to yourself. The third lesson, you choose the purpose for everything you see. And the purpose that you choose is the one given to it. Right? Right there, it's telling you that you can see everything that occurs as being there to help you awaken if you choose to. And if you do choose to see everything that occurs as there to help you awaken, guess what? It's going to help you awaken. So, what should the devotee do then? Ramana Maharshi says, he has only to live up to the words of the Master and work within. The Master is both within and without. And again, it's within and without because it's the universe, right? And universe is just another word. We could say it's within and without because it's God, right? Again, that's just another word. We could say it's within and without because it's consciousness, right? I mean, whatever word you like. The Master is both within and without. So he creates conditions to draw. He creates conditions, right? It creates conditions to drive you inward. And at the same time, prepares the interior to drag you to the center. How does it prepare the interior? Well, we're prepared in a lot of ways. One of the ways that we're prepared is desire. And you're like, where did your desire to awaken come from? I mean, you might remember the desire kind of awakening. You know, sometimes people have stories about when they first started desire awakening, whatever situation caused that to happen. But where did that desire come from? It came from what we're calling here the guru, God, consciousness. Right? It didn't come out of nowhere. And so that's one of the ways, willingness. Where does your willingness come from? Consciousness, God, the guru. You know, it's preparing. It's both creating the outer circumstances that push you inward and preparing the interior to pull you inward. The master is both within and without. So he creates conditions to drive you inward and at the same time prepares the interior to drag you to the center. Thus he gives a push from without and exerts a pull from within. That feeling of devotion. Any of you guys experience that? I sure do. Where does that come from? It's the guru, God, the self, consciousness. He gives a push from without and exerts a pull from within so that you may be fixed at the center. Now we'll read the next paragraph. You think that the world can be conquered by your own efforts. When you are frustrated externally and are driven inward, you feel, oh, there is a power higher than man. That's an interesting paragraph. And it's something that I think we've all experienced, right? We've all, first of all, experienced the idea that the world can be conquered by our own efforts. I mean, maybe not to the grandiose idea that somehow I can end all war and feed all starving people and end all disease, although I think some people maybe have been that grandiose, but I think most of us haven't. But we've certainly thought we could get the kids and our children, get the kids to be the way we want them to be. And then we found out maybe that wasn't true. Or we thought we could make this work project work out, you know, go in the direction we wanted to get it to go in. And then we maybe found out that wasn't true or whatever. Get our spouse to act the way we want our spouse to act. And then we found out that wasn't true. You know, in less grandiose ways, we've all thought that we could conquer the universe through our own efforts and found out that wasn't true. And so became externally frustrated. Because guess what? We can't control it. We can't control our kids. We can't control our work projects, even though they're assigned to us. You know, and we can't control our spouses. Heck, how many of us can actually even control ourselves? And so when we attempt to conquer the universe, when we attempt to control things, we become externally frustrated, right? But then, you know, assuming that we do take time to go within, that we spend that time, you know, for me it's in the morning, going within in contemplation, we feel what you could call the opposite of trying to take control. You know, we go within, we surrender, we become empty. We begin to receive clarity, receive guidance that we know is from beyond this little self that's always trying to conquer the universe. And there is this feeling of, you know, it feels so much better, so much better than when we're trying to conquer the universe. You know, it's like fresh air. It's relaxing. It feels so good. In A Course in Miracles, it says that the Holy Spirit teaches through contrast. Sounds like Ramana Maharshi does too. Of course, remember, it's all one guru, right? It teaches through contrast. You know, it's pointing out, notice how you feel. Notice how you feel when you're externally frustrated because you can't control whatever you're trying to control. Notice what it feels like to try and be that one who is trying to control events and make them go a certain way, right? Feel what that feels like. And then notice what it feels like to just surrender completely. To be the empty shell and then receive the gift that is given from the universe. Contrast the feeling of trying to be that one in control, making everything go just the way I think it needs to go, and that one who has surrendered, share with me whatever you would have me see. You know, listening, getting insight. Which one? Which one? I don't know. The words that are coming are which one do you like better? But I don't feel like those words are enough. Which one feels like home? Which one feels like home? The control or the surrender and the emptiness? You know, that seems to be what Ramana Maharshi is pointing to in this paragraph. He says, you think that the world can be conquered by your own efforts. When you are frustrated externally and are driven inward, you feel, oh, there is a power higher than man. The next paragraph. The ego is like a very powerful elephant, which cannot be brought under control by any less than a lion, which in this instance is no other than the guru, whose very look makes the elephant-like ego tremble and die. Now, I think with my limited knowledge, I think he's referring to the elephant and the lion, because of an old Hindu tale, you know, a tale. Where the guru is like the lion that shocks you awake, right? But the ego is like a very powerful elephant. You know, we don't need to really pay much attention to the elephant part of that. We can if we want to, but the word very powerful. Our ego does have power over us. It'd be great if that wasn't true. But it is true. As long as we allow it to be true. You know, for example, when we're out there trying to control situations and make everything go just our way, that's when the very powerful ego has us under its control. Otherwise, we would never attempt to be controlling. That can only come from the ego. We would never attempt to... Remember I said earlier, the true guru never attempts anything. Remember that? So we would never attempt anything, otherwise attempting to control situations, unless we were under the influence of the very powerful ego. So Ramana Maharshi says, the ego is like a very powerful elephant, which cannot be brought under control by any less powerful than a lion. Which is, and so, now the lion is also being given the word powerful, or the guru is also being given the word powerful, But this is a very different kind of power. Right? It's the power, again, that we feel when we surrender, when we become empty. It's the powerful influence of love. The powerful influence of love. The ego is like a very powerful elephant which cannot be brought under control by any less powerful than a lion, which in this instance is no other than the guru, whose very look makes the elephant-like ego tremble and die. Now, I have experienced that innumerable times. That when I sat down, you know, the ego could be active, chatter, 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 blah, 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 worry, worry, right? In fact, a number of times has been, and it was all of that that drove me to my journal, where I would write, Holy Spirit, please help me see what I need to see about, you know, this situation. But the moment that I surrendered through the act of asking that question in my journal and listened to hear whatever inner wisdom would tell me, the ego disappeared. And there was just the inner wisdom and just the clarity and just the seeing. So when we turn our attention to the guru through surrender and emptiness, the ego dies, it disappears, at least for that limited amount of time. So the ego is like a very powerful elephant which cannot be brought under control by any less powerful than a lion, which in this instance is no other than the guru, whose very look makes the elephant-like ego tremble and die. Next paragraph. You will know in due course that your glory lies where you cease to exist. In order to gain that state, you should surrender yourself. Then the Master sees that you are in a fit state to receive guidance, and he guides you. Now, of course, when Ramana Maharshi says, your glory lies where you cease to exist, the you in that sentence is the one still identified with the ego, still identified with the mental chatter, still identified with thought. Right? It's not the true self, clearly. Your glory lies when you cease to exist. So instead of being worried about this situation or trying to control the situation or any other ego manifestation, surrendering and asking, how am I to see this? What am I to do? What am I to say? And again, the beauty of surrender is when it becomes a moment-to-moment habit. When you literally cease to think for yourself and you become empty and guided with the inner guru, which is the only guru that can hold your hand and whisper in your ear. Ramana Maharshi says, you will know in due course, right? Again, if you keep comparing that external frustration when you get back with the ego to that wonderful, refreshing home feeling of when you're with spirit, then you will learn in due course that your glory lies where you cease to exist, when you become the empty shell. You will learn in due course that your glory lies where you cease to exist. In order to gain that state, you should surrender yourself. moment to moment. Then the master sees that you are in a fit state to receive guidance, which means you aren't all caught up in ego. You have become the empty shell. And he guides you. Now, the interesting thing about that is that means that you are not guided by inner wisdom when you are listening to ego. You know, so when you're trying to control things, you are not guided because you're in the ego's realm. When you're worrying about things, you're not guided because you're in the ego's realm. When you're trying to figure out the future and how things are going to go in the future, you are not guided because you're in the ego's realm. Only when you surrender all of that and become empty and become willing for anything. That was always very important to me, to be willing for anything. Willing for this. I'll use the retreat house as the example because it's the current example. Willing for this retreat house to succeed or fail. You know, there were so many times in this process in the last few months where we didn't know whether we were going to end up with this retreat house. You know, there was a fire. And then we had to raise money quickly. And then there was a hailstorm. And then there was, you know, challenges getting a new agreement. You know, and we just didn't know. And the only way to be surrendered through all of that was to, in a way, not care, but I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean be willing for any outcome. Be willing to get the retreat house if that's how it's going to work out, and be willing not to get the retreat house if that's how it's going to work out. You know, not trying to affect anything. Another way that I often word that is only wanting awakening and nothing else. And seeing everything is helping me towards awakening, whether that's getting a retreat house or not getting a retreat house. The way it's working out is working out this way because it's helping me to awaken. Right? These are the attitudes that awaken us. And it's only with these types of attitudes that we can be surrendered to guidance. If we are trying to affect a certain situation in a certain way, which is often called being attached to outcomes, we will not receive guidance from inner wisdom. That ego will jump in and guide us happily. Because we're in its realm. It's very important to desire awakening more than anything else. It's very important to be detached from outcomes. It's very important to ask within, what am I to do now? So you will know in due course that your glory lies where you cease to exist. In order to gain that state, you should surrender yourself. Then the master sees that you are in a fit state to receive guidance, and he guides you. And that is the end of that particular answer. So next week I actually won't be here. I'm doing some traveling for the Thanksgiving week. So I'll be back in 2 weeks. And then I'll begin at the top of page 67 and we'll continue looking at the Guru and His grace. For now, there's really nothing else to share. So I'm going to release the mic a couple minutes early. I have to get prepared. We have an Awakening Together board meeting tonight, so I need to get this audio posted and get ready for the board meeting anyway so I can use a couple extra minutes. Bye-bye.